much for being here with us today. If this is your first time tuning in, welcome to the show. I am your host, Kelly Darty. I'm the founder and CEO of the KDS Collaborative, where we collaborate with you to continue to choreograph your vision, your goals, and ultimately your success. Again, thank you guys so much for being here today. Let's keep this party rolling. We are in our Inspired series, and the focus of this week is Recreate. So before I welcome our fabulous guest today, I wanted to take a second to share my thoughts on the word recreate, as it can feel a little complex. So recreate is one of those sneaky words that, depending upon the context in which it's used, it can mean different things. So very, very simply put, I'm a choreographer, right? So I can create a dance and I can look at that dance and I can think, wow, that really did a great job of telling the story. And I feel like more audiences should see that. I'm going to recreate this later down the road on another set of dancers. Or conversely, I can look at a dance and think, wow, that's trash. Let's start over. Let's recreate that all together. So in both instances, the word's appropriate. Thus, it can be a little tricky, right? So we've talked a lot throughout the course of COVID-19 about having an unforeseen momentary pause. This has left me wondering how many people have taken the opportunity to look at their journey, the journey toward their goals or their career choices, and have wondered to themselves, is this path still serving me? And am I still fulfilled by the original plan? Honestly, guys, maybe even at this point, it's not a matter of fulfillment. Like, let's be honest, for some of us, it may be, am I finding the financial gain that I need during this time? It doesn't matter. Whatever the case may be, take a second and assess. Is it working for you? Are you fulfilled? Are you happy? Question mark. A great question. Are you happy with what you're doing and the direction that your life is going? And if you're not, stop and realize that that is okay too, because you have the ability to recreate all of this. Our guest today is coming to us all the way from Paris, France, by way of Zoom interview, and she is going to share how she recognized that she needed to recreate her journey. And that led her to uncover her true passion, and she has built her own wildly successful destination wedding business. Having grown up in New Jersey with her eyes set on a career in performance art, today's guest, Jennifer, realized that her love of fine wines and extraordinary events was causing her heart to gravitate toward a different type of art. She has been creating luxury weddings and events in France since 2013. Her work has been published in Martha Stewart Weddings, Style Me Pretty, Magnolia Rouge, Gray Likes Weddings, Wedding Chicks, Wedding Sparrow, Ruffled, and so many more. Her approach to wedding planning and design is different in that she offers couples a truly hands-on experience. Each wedding is deeply personal to her, and she goes above and beyond to create a seamlessly executed wedding planning and design experiences for couples and their guests. After all, if you've ever been to a destination wedding, you know that that is not simply a wedding. It is a full experience. You guys are in for such a treat today. As mentioned, Jen is coming to us from Le Paris, so please excuse any potential sound glitches or silly Zoom delays. We want to keep bringing you the most inspired content we can during this unprecedented time and feel super fortunate to have Zoom as an option. So thank you for your patience, and for the good folks over at Zoom, if you're listening today, thank you for making all of this possible. Without further ado, please welcome world-renowned wedding guest, planning and design extraordinaire, and my good friend, Jen, of Jennifer Fox Weddings. Woo! Everyone heard the intro, but here we are, everyone.
the one, the only, Jennifer Fox. I'm not even going to try it because I'm going to blow it. Jonier.
It was close. Jennifer Fox Jonier. Hi, Kelly. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm holding down the fort here in France. I'm so happy to chat with you.
Oh my gosh. I am so happy that I am looking at your face through a Zoom right now. So everybody, just so everyone's on the same page, yes, we are still practicing these socially distanced interviews. So should there be any sound glitches, thank you for your patience. We very much appreciate it. But, you know, here we are, 2020 quarantine style. But seeing your face through a Zoom is just gives me so much happiness and joy.
You're sweet. Well, I made myself up just for you.
I'm happy to see that you showered, you know.
Good, good.
Sometimes we got to make moves. So everyone heard your lovely intro, but give our listeners the overview of the Jennifer Fox.
Okay, so I am originally from New Jersey, and I moved to France about a little bit over 10 years ago. It seems like yesterday, but I guess I've been here for a while now.
Yes.
I am a wedding planner and designer, and I specialize in luxury destination weddings all over the country of France, not just in Paris, but in Burgundy, in Provence, in Normandy, in the Loire Valley, you name it. And I also do other destination weddings all over Europe as well.
That's amazing.
Thank you. So yeah, I moved here 10 years ago from New York City, and I haven't looked back.
So I think something that is important for the listeners to know is that whenever you moved to France, you didn't speak French.
I did not. No, I didn't.
Ladies and gentlemen, you can, in fact, recreate your path. Go on.
You absolutely can. So it's funny. When I first moved over here, I think I could only muster up a very timid bonjour and merci, and that was about it. That means please and thank you for those of you who are not fluent en français. But yeah, so once I decided that I was going to be staying here for a little bit, I decided to enroll myself in French language classes at La Sorbonne, and I studied French for a good 2 years, I would say. And just from studying and for a very brief moment, I taught private English classes to very little French children, well-behaved children. Not like you can really like go in there like gangbusters and just start speaking English with 4 and 5 year olds.
Right.
That definitely helped with my language skills and just the dating scene. That helped a bit as well.
Amazing. Gosh, I just like, I can't even imagine. So you moved to, so first of all, what made you move to France initially?
So for about, I would say 20 plus years, I was a trained professional singer dancer. Yes. Originally,
which is how we know each other originally.
Yes. I don't remember the years that I actually was a professional performer. I think it probably was about 5 to 7 years performing professionally. I toured around the country and all around North America for 2 plus years. I did other shows nationally in the US. And just after a while, I didn't love living out of a suitcase. I didn't love waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning and having to stand online for auditions, multiple auditions in a day, and then, you know, first have my part-time job and, you know, everything that's just everything that just is involved with performing in not necessarily New York City, but in general, mm-hmm. it just wasn't for me. And I found my love of dance just kind of slipping away eventually. Right. And I just thought, all right, I have to make a change. But that being said, it was a long time to find what I was good at and not only that, but to really find my confidence in what I was good at. There were a lot of trials and errors, which I wouldn't change for anything. I think it's very important to kind of dip your toe into multiple different arenas and try things out. You don't know what you're good at, or you don't know what you enjoy doing. And just kind of, it took a while to find myself again, if I could say that.
Yeah. That makes sense. So wait, let's go back just really quickly though. When you started your performance career, am I correct in saying that you were at Hershey Park?
Yes, you are very
well. And I asked that question because we had a guest on a few weeks ago that also started at Hershey Park, and it made me think, like, I wonder if they know each other, which we can talk about.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes. And he was at Hershey Park for a long time and actually still does a lot of work with Hershey Park. His name's Mike Windisch.
Oh, I don't know him.
He did a lot with the bands there, kind of how he started. Oh, okay. So you may have not had any interaction with him. But anyway, you went on, you were on tour with Cats, correct?
I was on tour with Cats, correct.
And which cat were you, out of curiosity?
So I was the assistant dance captain and a swing. So a female swing, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I covered, I think it was 5 or 6 of the dancer roles. So at any given time, if someone was on stage and they suddenly got injured or sick, or if it was someone's day off and they needed someone to be covered, I was the gal.
Gotcha. Amazing. Amazing. And we met actually on a contract that was in Branson, Missouri.
Yes.
Which we won't talk a lot about, but we won't. But we met and became great friends and then lived together momentarily in New York.
We did live together. It's funny because I don't quite remember how that happened. All I can say was you were a godsend. Because I'll tell you why. The time that we lived together was around a time in my life that I was insecure about my dancing ability, and I was insecure about my passion mm-hmm. for dance and musical theater and everything that's involved in that industry and lifestyle, that it was really nice to have a fellow, to be living with not only a very good friend, but also a fellow performer that I could be open and honest with about my thoughts and insecurities and feelings and not be judged for it.
Oh, for sure. And likewise. And I'm sure also for you, it was really nice to live with someone who was so much less than as a vocalist that you could be like, dang, maybe I do have some things going for me, actually.
You're so crazy. I really think that you don't give yourself enough credit.
Well, I do a really good Britney Spears, and that's where we'll leave it at this point. So, yeah, I remember at that point in time when we were living together, you were kind of starting to feel like maybe your heart was headed in a different direction, which, you know, given that time or really any time can happen to anyone. And, you know, I think that people get really wrapped up in thinking that people are going to think that they failed or like they were silly to ever try. And I think it's really important that people understand that's never the case. And sometimes, you know, you find through the journey and through trying different things, and like you said, dipping your toe in different things, you're going to find what's going to work for you and ultimately will help shape your end product of life, if you will. So you were kind of, I remember getting, becoming more interested in things like, you know, fine wines and nice meals. And I just, I remember we were what, like 20 something, like young 20s.
We must have been, were we even 25? We might have been
40.
Wow.
I don't think so, because I will never forget, and it now in my life is such a different story, obviously, but I will never forget you looking at me being like, man, this day has just been so terrible. I just need a nice glass of wine. And I was like, what? You mean a tequila shot or no? Okay. She wants a nice glass of wine. And now it's funny because like I will obviously have that thought now, but at the time you were just so much more advanced in all things food, wine, events. And it was kind of, I think, a time where you were starting to sort of make that shift.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, from a very, very young age, I always enjoyed taking care of people, and I always enjoyed not just entertaining by like being up on stage, but entertaining people by, like I said, taking care of them and making them feel welcome and comfortable and what have you. So the little comforts in my life, wine, cheese, dark chocolate, are very, very, very important to me. And I imagine to a lot of other people as well. So it was nice when I kind of was able to finally find my groove and not feel so alone in it. Not that I was feeling completely isolated, but I just felt like I was in better company.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So you moved to France, you're learning the language, and then what happens?
So I moved to France, and because I was accepted into the wine management program at Le Cordon Bleu. So I did that program for a year for my first year of living in Paris, with the idea that I wanted to open a wine bar. Like I said, the thing that appealed to me most about opening a wine bar was talking with people and getting to know a little bit more about them and where they were from and what they like to drink and maybe make them try things like that, conversational things, and just getting to know people and guest service. So then I decided that in order to be a business owner and open a bar, whether it be in Paris, that was the plan, or wherever, I needed to get a little bit more education, business education. So I went back to school here in Paris to get my MBA in international hospitality. So in the middle of that program, it kind of dawned on me that, oh, I don't think I want to open a wine bar.
You're like, maybe not, actually.
And the reason was, I had an internship at one of the Michelin-starred restaurants here in Paris, and just kind of like the vibe that I got from that position didn't completely gel with what I wanted to do. I didn't like the idea of having to keep track of inventory and storage and all that stuff. So I quickly found a part-time job position with a wedding planning agency in Paris, and I fell in love. I fell in love with the company. I fell in love with the job. I had no previous experience with actual wedding planning, but from my time of living in New York, I did have quite a number of years of experience in high-end client services. Mm-hmm. So I knew how to talk to people. I knew how to attend to people. I was very good at, I am still very good at making lists and
staying organized and
organizational tools and whatnot. So it just seemed like the perfect fit, and it was just a very natural transition.
Nice.
So so I graduated with my MBA. And soon after, I decided to start my own business in Paris. I had originally called it Avec Weddings and Events.
Yes.
Then about a year and a half to 2 years after starting, I decided that I think it would be a better idea to really put my face, my name to the brand instead of, not that I was necessarily hiding behind my previous company name, but I was really proud of my work and I was really ready to put my face forward to everyone. And so I changed my company name to Jennifer Fox Weddings.
Beautiful. Do you feel like in that rebrand that, was there anything else that really changed, or was it really just kind of a name rebrand?
It was more than a name rebrand. I think if I'm completely honest, it was more of a confidence rebrand. Like I said, to really be present to not only the couples and clients that I work with, but also to all of my creative partners and vendors and venues that I work and collaborate with as well, to show them that I'm really a player in the game and I'm ready for whatever this business throws at me.
Yeah, which with a wedding planning of any type, there can be all sorts of things thrown at you. So that being said, prior to COVID-19, the coronavirus that we are currently in the midst of kind of navigating, prior to that, how much were you traveling? What did that look like? How many clients did you have at any given time? You know, what was just a typical day versus like a typical, you know, wedding day? Obviously those are all going to be very different.
Right. So I think it's best to kind of break up that question a little bit. Mm-hmm. So typically in a season, my season ranges from 10 to 12 weddings per year. I don't like to take on a number over that range, just because the way that I run my business is I like to be overly present and available to my clients. Mm-hmm. And I would prefer to focus on 10 to 12 rather than kind of spread myself thin over 20 plus.
Sure.
20 plus weddings. In terms of travel, like I said, I have weddings. I've done weddings in Paris, where I'm currently located. I've done weddings in Provence, in Burgundy, in Normandy, in the Loire Valley. A couple of years ago, I did a small elopement wedding in Santorini, Greece. So I kind of travel all over, wherever the job takes me. Mm-hmm. But in terms of on a daily basis, it kind of changes day to day, week to week. I do work from my home. So I would say between working from my home, just on the back end of things in front of my computer, client calls, design creation, things of that nature. I also head into Paris, or I should say I would head into Paris probably 2 to 3 times a week to meet with vendors, to have coffees, have lunches, discuss the client, discuss the project, run errands. One of the things that I love about my job is that it always looks different.
Sure.
I was never good at just sitting in front of a computer in an office space in a building with just having the same exact 9-to-5 day over and over and over. Mm-hmm. that's good for some people, but that just never suited me. So this, with what I do now, with everything being different constantly, and I should say each wedding that I do is different as well, because it's solely based on the couple, that is what I love as well. Everything is always fresh and new and exciting.
So you're working with different vendors, but ultimately the vision and the creation, and so do you just guide them essentially in like, hey, this is what I'm seeing from based upon what I know about the couple and what their needs and their desires and their vision looks like? Is that kind of how that works?
Yes, correct. So basically what happens is in the beginning, I really encourage my couples to talk me through how they vision their wedding day, if they have favorite colors, if they have like family heirlooms that they want to incorporate into the design, or if there is some type of childhood memory, or if there is like a special piece of art that the two of them like that they want to try to incorporate into the design of the wedding day. Basically, any information that I can get is more than welcomed in order for me to be able to create a one-of-a-kind, personalized, bespoke, unique wedding day. And that's not just special for them, that's also special for their guests.
Sure. So then I guess you have a list then, if you will, of potential vendors that you like to work with, or I guess my question really is, how do you make those connections? How did you get all of those contacts pulled together?
I took people out for lots of coffee.
Everyone in France is very well caffeinated at this point.
Yes. Well, I will say that my closest vendor partners I probably have worked with or have known since 2013. That's when I started working in the wedding planning business in France. So even though my company started in 2015,2020. I've been in the game for a while.
Yeah, for sure you have.
To work with specific people who I trust, who I know are professional and who are creative and who have a really fearless, tenacious, innovative energy that I find works best with my design aesthetic and with what works best for the clients who choose to hire me for their wedding.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. So what then does a typical wedding day look like?
So,
is this a loaded question? You're like, here we go.
I guess I would say, because the actual wedding day looks very different for an elopement of two people than it would for a wedding of 100 people.
Right.
So let's kind of break down both. For a wedding of two people, because I guess I should say in full disclosure, it's very, very, very common for people to come over to Paris for elopements for two. Sometimes it's they don't want to include their family if they're having family problems or what have you, things of that nature. But other times it's they want their money to go further, and the things that are important to them, like gourmet food, a specific floral budget, a designer gown are much more attainable with a wedding for two, rather than a wedding of 100, where they would have to scale back and edit certain aspects.
Right.
Yeah, of their wedding dream. So for a wedding for two, for an elopement for two, those usually start very, very, very early in the morning, especially in the summertime. And I'll tell you why. It's basically to try, I mean, we can never fully ensure, but it's basically to try to ensure the least amount of people as possible during a ceremony, during a photo, an early morning ceremony, an early morning photo shoot, what have you. Mm-hmm. Paris is a very popular city.
So, yes, you said.
So there are constantly people, crowds, gatherings everywhere in parks and monuments on beautiful landscapes, street corners, what have you. So the earlier you can start a ceremony or, as I said, a photo shoot, the better. So I would say that wedding, an elopement for two, that wedding day, hair and makeup could start at 4 a.m.
Whoa. Okay. And are you there for that?
No, I am not. Okay. I usually come around 5:30. So, I mean, it's still early.
Yeah.
I usually come around 5:30 or 6, depending on the start time and the timing of the stylist. And once I'm there on site, I'm ironing dresses, dress shirts, setting out accessories, style, like jewelry, shoes, cufflinks, bow ties, for the photographer. I am setting out, stationary pieces and creating, flat lays. And flat lays are when you put your either an invitation suite or if it's an elopement, a lot of people have like an elopement announcement. Okay. Sometimes bespoke wedding menus if they're having a private dinner afterwards, and basically any paper product. Okay. You put it straight down on a really pretty piece of material that we call a styling board, and you put you can put flowers around it, you can put different little accessories, you can put different little decor pieces that are meaningful to you. Basically, create a lovely little quote unquote still life shot that your photographer will then take, and it just helps to fully tell your wedding day story.
Gotcha.
So I'm there early putting all of that stuff together. I'm then waiting for transportation to arrive, waiting for the bouquet and the boutonniere to arrive as well, along with the photographer. I put everyone in the car so they can take their early sunrise photos. Sometimes I will then join the couple afterwards at a specific location, if it's a public location, to meet with the wedding officiant to get the ceremony started. Or sometimes, depending on the hotel, like if the hotel happens to be a really, really beautiful hotel, like if they're staying at the Ritz in Paris, or if they're staying at the Four Seasons or something like that, they may have a beautiful hotel suite, or they may have rented out an event space in the hotel, and I'm there on site waiting for the florist to decorate the room. So it just kind of depends. Like I said, every wedding is different.
Right.
Depends on the needs of the bride and the groom. But basically for elopements, I'm there very, very early until they don't need me anymore.
Gotcha. Yeah. So they're like, okay, you may leave now.
Until they want to take a nap.
Sure. No, that makes sense. So then I guess if it's a larger event, that becomes a whole different ball game. Obviously, exactly. Start time is different. End time is probably very different.
Timing is very, very different. I'm not there at 5:30 in the morning. I'm usually, on the actual wedding day, I usually start around 9 or 9:30 in the morning. And sometimes I don't leave until 3 in the morning.
Yeah. So those of you listening, let me just tell you a little bit of something that happens at a wedding in France, or maybe it's not all weddings in France, but weddings
in Europe in general.
Okay. Well, if not, it's definitely weddings that involve Jennifer Fox. So she got married in, what was that, 2018?
It was 2018, yes.
Oh my goodness. So we went to the wedding, and it was, first of all, like, unfortunately, I will never be able to attend anything quite like that again in life, because you just really outdid yourself there, Trigger.
Thank you. And you never know.
Well, it was incredible. She got married in a castle in Burgundy, and a fairy tale wedding would be an understatement of events. But what I have to say is that the day started, the ceremony was, I think, what, like at 4?
The ceremony was at either 5:30 or 6.
It was late. So it was a little bit later. But I think, you know, by the time we took the transportation to get to where we needed to go and whatever, maybe the day started around like 4 or 4:30. But that experience did not end until 3, 4, 5 in the morning. And that's just, that was an aggressive day.
Yes. So I should say, I don't think it's just France. I do think that it's Europe as well, because I did go to a wedding a few years back in the UK that I didn't leave until 4 or 4:30.
But, man, America, we got to get it together over here, friends.
Seriously. Yeah. People like to party.
Yeah. I have the other thing that I have to mention about your wedding that I still like, I could so vividly remember this, is that, you know, the food was incredible and the ceremony was incredible and there was cake and there was wine and there was all of these things, but the dancing didn't start until probably like 11 or maybe even midnight. And I've never seen a dance floor fill up so quickly. It was out of control. People were like running from like all ends. It's what I envisioned, like the world is what's going to happen in the world once they're like, okay, COVID-19 is, you know, we got a vaccine and it's fine. It's what's going to happen to the world, because people just like came sprinting from all angles at this reception, and the dance floor was lit the whole entire time.
I love that. Yeah. So in France, weddings are organized a little bit different. So first you have your ceremony, then you have your cocktail hour, which usually, depending on the size of a wedding, could be from an hour and a half to 2 hours for the cocktail itself. Then you have a sit-down dinner for about, could be 3 hours, and then the dancing starts. And usually, I mean, that can stay, like you said, until 4, 5, 6 in the morning. My sister-in-law, I think we left at 5:30 in the morning.
It was wild, but it was so fun. The other thing, though, that I think is needs to be mentioned, which, you know, is not the case for everybody, but, you know, where I grew up in Washington, Missouri, a WashMo wedding, like, kind of insinuates that there's, like, some pretty heavy partying that's going on. But, like, everybody was pretty well-behaved at your wedding.
Well, we lectured them beforehand.
I see.
No, but yes, everyone was pretty well behaved.
there was a chat ahead of time. I didn't have that. No one gave me that chat, but I still feel like I was pretty well behaved. All right, let's go back to your day to day. So now, obviously, things are a little different. This is a worldwide global pandemic, so what does the day look like now? I mean, what exactly is even happening in France with regard to guidelines and so on and so forth?
Right. So our confinement was just lifted on the 11th of May.
Your confinement was much tighter than it is here.
Ours was much tighter. Yes. So we were confined for, I think about 2 months, 8 weeks, where we had to provide a filled out form, a signed form justifying with a timestamp justifying why we were leaving our homes and for what reason we were leaving our homes. The reasons why you were allowed to leave your home were to, if you were an essential worker, if you had to go grocery shopping or walk your dog, if you had to take care of someone elderly or someone ill, things of that nature, and you were only allowed to be outside of your home for 1 hour at a time.
Wow.
Yes. You would be stopped. You would, people, they would stop you. Police would stop you and ask for your justification. And if you didn't have that, you would incur a fine. So, it was very strict. It was very frustrating at times not to be able to just walk out of your house and go to work and just live mm-hmm. your life like we're all used to. But I mean, I have to say, I wouldn't change it for the world. I think that it was important for us to have these very strict measurements put into place. And everyone just kind of did their part and hunkered down and stuck together. I mean, of course, you're going to have some people that decided to not follow the rules. Sure. But for the most part, everyone understood that, I mean, this is bigger than all of us, than all of us. And when we're community is a very, very, our sense of community was very, very strong.
Sure. So I guess in saying that, and, you know, the realization of this is bigger than all of us, I mean, you've had a lot of things having to be rescheduled and, you know, adjusted and all of that. Can you speak to that a little bit, how that's been for you?
Yeah. So, you know, it's, so I had, this season I should have had 9 weddings. No, I'm sorry. I had 1 wedding in January. So 8 weddings, summer weddings. Mm-hmm. I had 6 of them reschedule to 2021, and I still have 2 that are on the books for the end of October.
Okay.
My fingers extra tightly that everything stays the way it should be for October. But someone asked me the other day, well, what is 2021 going to be like for you? It's just going to be crazy. And the answer is, yeah, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be crazy for all of us. But I mean, you just have to jump in with 2 feet and do what you have to do. When all of this is done, everyone's, I mean, you can never stop celebration. You can never stop joy or happiness. And now more than ever, with coming out of confinement and eventually when a vaccine is found and whatnot, people are going to want to be celebrating together with their friends and with their families. So we do the best we can and just try not to focus on the hard part.
Right, right.
That's kind of been my motto throughout my life. Just don't focus on the hard part. Just do it.
Yeah, for real. But so I guess like, you know, you're working with, and I use brides because, you know, we have a tendency to maybe the female has a tendency, given historic information, to maybe be a little bit more emotional about the wedding day itself and, you know, the planning and what have you, but not always the case. But how are you helping the couples, the brides, the grooms, whomever, keep their morale high? Like, I know if it were me, like, I don't know how I would be, because there's, you know, the thought of this is bigger than all of us, but then it's also like, this is my special day, you know, like, how do you handle that?
Well, so I have been very lucky in that, the brides that I have on the books for this year, everyone has been incredibly understanding and incredibly flexible, willing and eager to change their mm-hmm. date. open to having a weekday wedding and not necessarily on a weekend, because that may be difficult as well with certain vendors or venues and whatnot.
Can I interrupt you? Thank you for bringing that up. I've noticed in watching your portfolio and watching, you know, you post and that sort of thing, weekday weddings are much more of the norm there. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think the reason why is that a lot of my clients in particular, and I imagine that this is the case with most destination weddings, people are coming to a specific destination, a specific country, especially in the summertime, for a trip, for a vacation. Right. So if you're not able to have your wedding on a Saturday night, a Wednesday isn't any less than. People are still going to be coming to France, to Italy, to Spain, wherever, to celebrate you and spend their time in that country. So think of it that way. Don't think of it as like a disappointing factor that you have to just get over. I mean, it doesn't have to be that way at all.
Sure. So your brides and grooms have been flexible with perhaps rearranging to be during the week and that sort of thing.
Yeah. And even before, even like last year, I had two weddings that were on a Monday, and they were lovely.
Sure.
But yeah, to answer your question about like how do I deal with my brides and just the emotion of things, I mean, it's hard. You can't help but be sympathetic.
Yeah.
You can't help but try your best to be patient with people, to stay humble, to give them, basically give them time to mourn. It's a big life event that you focused all of your energy and a lot of your money on and your time on a specific date. And when that date is no longer, it's a very, very hard pill to swallow.
Yeah.
So, and I think that it's important for people to keep that in mind and remember. I mean, for us on the other side of it, the team members who are working to create this day, I can understand how for some people it's easy to forget about that point. But I think the fact that I had a wedding myself, and if I had psyched myself up for a specific date and then had to change it because just life happened, it's very difficult. So just time. Give people time and give people access to you as much as possible.
So I guess then in terms of your day-to-day now, people, are you having a lot of meetings with clients via Zoom? Is that something that's continuing to happen? Are you still working with vendors by way of like social distancing or?
Yeah. So I am definitely on Zoom on a weekly basis. I chat with clients via other platforms like Instagram, WhatsApp, normal telephone. I'm very, very reachable and accessible to people. I mean, I was before, now it's like more so. And I just enjoy working that way because I know how I would, if I were them, how I would want to be taken care of.
Right, for sure.
Yeah. So in terms of just communicating, the ways haven't necessarily changed, but I would say the frequency has. And like I said, for me, that's perfectly fine.
Do you feel like there are things that maybe, and I've asked this question to several people, and it's, my wording of the question is very important, because at no point do we want to celebrate, you know, what has happened. But I also think that in the process of having to kind of recreate your path toward your goals or navigate through this time, there may be other things that people have found that have actually maybe helped them improve in their professional life. Do you find that there are things for you that have maybe improved in some way, shape, or form?
That's a really good question. Yeah, I would say that it just allows me that everything that has happened has forced all of us to just slow down and take a beat and just try to remember what we are celebrating. Mm-hmm. So yeah, absolutely, things like flowers, entertainment, decor, all of that is very important. But also I'm now more able to speak to my clients in terms of helping them with why they chose France. What meaning do they want to convey to their guests with their ceremony texts or to each other? So I would say that for people getting married, that's kind of a nice quote unquote trade-off to be able to kind of put the focus back on the marriage and not necessarily the wedding.
Do you think that going forward and after things start to open back up and we kind of shift back into quote unquote normalcy, if you will, do you think that some of what you've learned in doing that you'll carry with you?
I think so. It's kind of like a nice checks and balances mm-hmm. situation.
Well, but it's hard, you know. I think that it also, you know, something that you said where we've kind of had to slow down, it's hard to always do that whenever you've got so many things going on at one time too, like you do or I do, or you know, you do stop, you don't have time, sorry, to stop and think about, you know, why are you doing this, what is important about this particular event or whatever. And you know, now that you've had the moment to think about it, maybe I know for me, like I'll shift a lot in my delivery and how I work with casts or how I work with clients mm-hmm. in general with their motivation and that sort of thing. And so I'd imagine that for you, that probably is no different.
I think because I'm used to dealing with private events that are so emotionally charged, that I always have to have a special type of relationship with the client in mm-hmm. terms of how I speak with them, in terms of communication and delivery and whatnot. And for the most part, that's why I chose to do private events and not corporate events. Mm-hmm. Because I just like to have that relationship with people. Sure. I like the emotional side of it. I know some people, it's not for everyone, and some people really shy away from it. But each wedding that I do is very, very personal to me. And each client that I work with, a lot of them I become friends with afterwards because, it's just a day, but it's one of the most special days, moments of their life. So it should be very emotional and it should be definitely. Yeah. And whomever the planner is, they should have this mentality because if not, I mean, I don't know, it's just a shame.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. And I think recognizing that and embracing that and, you know, for you, obviously it is a little bit different because you are working so closely with them and it is the emotions and everything from the word go. But I feel like for everyone, remembering why you're doing something and why it's special and the story behind it and everything is just, it's so important. So I just have to wonder then for people who have kind of had this moment to slow down, do you think that people are finding the time to like say, okay, maybe what I'm doing right now is not exactly what I want to be doing in my life? And if so, where do they go from here?
Yeah, I would think that a lot of people are saying that right now. It's kind of like, you know, if you're forced to put a magnifying glass up to your life, yeah. Yeah. It forces you to look. I guess I would just say to people, because I mean, I kind of did that in my life, not necessarily slowing down per se, but definitely I had to rethink about what path I was taking and if I was happy and what I would do to change things. But I guess for people who are in that category and who are feeling maybe a little bit unsure or uneasy or unhappy or whatnot, I would say use this time to focus on something that brings you joy. The way that I got out of my dance career and into my wedding planning career, what I do now, it was not a straight line at all. It was very curvy, and I tried a lot of different jobs and industries and hobbies along the way to try to find myself. So I would say focus on something that you love doing, and maybe start by trying to figure out if you can turn that into a career.
Sure.
And don't be afraid to try things. Don't be afraid to hear no. Don't be afraid to put yourself into a situation that makes you uncomfortable. I mean, that's how we grow, right? Just don't be afraid of the unknown. Sure. It's okay.
It's going to be okay. Totally. It totally is going to be okay. So I'm going to ask you this question, and I know that I didn't prep you for this, so I apologize, but I have to know, and you probably can't answer it, but I'm just going to shoot it out there anyway. Do you have a particular wedding or event that you've planned that was your favorite, or is this like, do you have a favorite kid kind of question?
My own.
Okay, fair. I walked into that, but like, okay, beyond your own.
Beyond my own, yes. Beyond my own, I would say that a couple of years ago, I did a very, very small elopement for two people, elopement wedding in Santorini, Greece. Mm-hmm. And I loved it so much because the bride, it was the first time in my career that the bride told me, do whatever you want. I give you full reign. This is who I am. This is who my fiance is. This is what is important to us, blah, blah, blah. Take it and run. Do whatever you want design-wise. I trust you. Yeah. So it was wonderful because I packed all of the design decor in my suitcase to Greece, carried it all the way on the plane and up. If anyone has ever been to Santorini, I mean, they know what the stair situation is like there. So carried my suitcase up and down the stairs and this and that and whatnot. And it was so special because it was their wedding, but I was so proud that she put her trust in me, that she hired me to fully bring my vision to represent and showcase them. And it was beautiful and it was meaningful. And I loved it. Every minute of this experience. And
oh my gosh,
they were such a lovely couple. It was great. Yeah.
Well, you know what, Jen, I would happily hand a day over to you and say, just make this great.
Well, I'll happily take it.
here's the day. Just make this cute. So what now? What's happening now in Jennifer Fox Weddings? You had mentioned that you had a giveaway going on right now, or a contest.
Oh yeah. So, I am organizing a giveaway. I can't tell you exactly what it is. I'm just giving a little teaser. I'm going to announce the giveaway tomorrow Tuesday at 7 p.m. Paris time, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I am offering a really, really fun, really cool, amazing package to celebrate having 500 plus followers on Instagram.
Yes, ma'am. That's so exciting. So where do we go to your website?
Yes. So you can go to my Instagram. It's at Jennifer Fox Weddings. You can find all of the info there on Tuesday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Oh my gosh. Awesome. Well, it's Wednesday. They're listening to this on a Wednesday. So, and folks, sorry. We're recording this on Monday, but it is now live. So you can go now to her Instagram.
It's now live. So it is now live. So put your name in to win.
I'm going to do it right now, right this minute.
Awesome.
Go win an event. Thank you so much for coming on today. I so appreciate it. I just think the world of you, and I'm so proud of you for everything that you've accomplished and your journey and your ability to recreate. You know, when we talk about recreating, I think that it's important that whenever you look at that word recreate, that you see it from both angles. I mean, there's the start anew, but there's also the recreating something that you've already done. And I think that, you know, in listening to you and hearing about your journey and watching your journey, you know, there are so many things that, yes, you created new whenever you decided to recreate, you know, yourself and your brand and everything. But I also think there are so many things that you took with you from the life of performing, like in terms of, you know, you're not scared to hear the word no. You're wildly creative. You have a very certain expectation for what your product needs to look like. And I think that, you know, even though you're sharing a different kind of art, it still has the root of you that is so special and makes you so special to what you do.
Well, thank you. That's really sweet. I appreciate that.
Well, you're welcome. You're my friend. So that's the kind of feedback that you get.
No, but it's true. And I mean, I can't stress to your listeners enough that really don't be afraid of no. I would say embrace the no. Every time a client decides to go with a different planner, or if I'm not able to work with a specific photographer or what have you, I mean, I remember from auditioning, I think they say for every 100 auditions you go on, you get one job. And that's always stuck with me throughout many, many, many years. Don't be afraid of the no. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. Don't be afraid to reinvent yourself. Don't be afraid of education. I mean, stay humble, stay hungry. Tenacity is key. Just always continue moving forward.
I love that. And I love you.
I love you.
Well, I am going to hopefully get to see you very, very, very soon. Hopefully all of this will lift and you can come visit me, or I'll come back and visit you. I guess if I have to, I'll go back to France.
I guess.
I guess if I have to. Well, thank you again so, so, so much for being on. Everybody, I will see you back here next week. Same time, same place. Until then, have an awesome, awesome day.